Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SWB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have TalkCast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 724-444-7444, and follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShow website at www.talkshow.com. Search for call ID 17702. Please use a computer because I've heard that iPads and other tablet devices don't work so well that way. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall at gmail.com. Also, if you need to reach me via Skype, my Skype ID is FranzGames, FranzGames. And of course, you can follow me on the Twitters. My account there is Paul Franz. So to find me on Twitter, just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. That's PaulFranz. And of course, there's a secondary account called Franz Games, where I announce this podcast, news, and other client updates. Some quick news from A to B this week. New on Warehouse 23, DriveThru RPG, and Wargame Vault this week is Nexus number 2. Scanned in and made available. Steve Cole has been working on Caps Log number 53, blog, and of course, art for Zinni Master Starship book, as he has done in the past, and has discussions with a potential D6 designer, and also discussions with a potentially new die cutting company. So, in the old fashioned, I'm assuming he's talking about die cutting as in the old fashioned way of creating miniatures. Steve Pedrick was busy working on, of course, the Starfleet Battles updates and the Zinni and Gorn Master Starship books. And Gene was busy working on proofreading those Master Starship books. So the Zinni Master Starship book seems to be the most closest to being out the door because of it got three people all working on it at the same time. So it's going through the pipeline quite quickly. Also, Gene was busy working on uploading Shapeways, stuff to Shapeways, and of course, the different e-tailers. So, moving on to the SFB Online tournaments. When it comes to the Rat 47 tournament run by Bill Scheller, it is completed with the winner being Paul Graves. Congratulations, Paul Graves, on winning Rat 47 and getting your Rated Ace card. Moving on to the Master Starship tournament, we have 24 people currently signed up, and it's supposed to start next weekend. This upcoming weekend is when the sign-up is supposed to be completed. And I'm not sure when Andrew is planning on actually submitting the giving the matchups. When it comes to the Platinum Hat tournament, we have actually round one game has actually started, which is good to hear. Round two still has those two games, including my own, to be completed, and Ted Fay has made it all the way to the semifinal round, which is awesome to see. And when it comes to my games, a quick update for those people who haven't read the discussion board, and that is that we've gotten through four turns. I had gotten the Gorn and my Seltorian. I got them cornered, and I got a nice range five shots, a hack and slash, doing a total of actually 14 internals. Did two internals on turn three and another 12 on turn number four, and I actually did pretty well on the internals. I got two phaser ones, one phaser three, one plasma F, and of course then there's seven hull and one bridge. So got some fluff there too, which can't be avoided, but hey, got some weapons, which is nice. Which, in my case, it's quite nice because I need every single torpedo gone. After I hit him, he headed the opposite direction. Why? Because he wanted to get that down shield away from me, because if he turned in, then I would have gotten on his, stayed on his down shield number 5, and then would have just beat the crap out of him, especially because my particle cannon still can fire another turn, you know, later on in that same turn. And also, I still had 2 other phaser ones, which I had yet to fire. So I can understand why he headed away. Well, while he headed away, I just turned in the opposite direction of him. So instead of trying to follow him, because my shield number 1 was down to 1 box, I decided to turn away from him and to get a better, basically give myself a little bit of room so then I can actually recharge my weapons. And in addition to recharging my weapons, I can also make sure that he's not on my shield number 1. When it comes to the library stuff, sorry, no progress there. We're still stuck at 2,411 definitions converted. We have to get some more progress. You know, this is bad. Percentage complete is still only 72.42%. So with that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one, the only, the Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, well, you got me. I sent out the notification a little late, so I'm not sure how many people are actually going to be coming. So it might be really, this might be a really, really short one. And Dave, no, I have not seen that website. Maybe I'll look at it some other time. But anyhow, tonight actually I was going to start off with something that actually I've been working on. And I need to bring it up because if I don't bring it up, I will not remember it. Which was, it's an idea that I have, and I think it's actually a really good idea. Because of, as I'm pointing out, you know, the easiest thing that can be moved to like mobile and things like that is actually the Starfleet Warlord. So, one thing that I've always wanted to do, but it's like, you know, I did a little bit of work on it, just a tiny bit, just to get a feel for it, because the biggest problem, obviously, of converting the engine from Clipper to some other language like Java, Go, or whatever, some other more modern language, is just the way Clipper works. Because Clipper is just, it's D-base. It's really weird. But to me, the thing that really drives me crazy as a developer of a normal everyday language is the whole idea that you have a variable. Now, the variable could be either a local variable or it could be a column for a selected file. You don't know which one it is. It seems like that. I think later on they actually added the whole idea of local variables, and then you knew that those were actually defined locally. But at the same time, when it comes to the columns, you know, the things that were actually there were columns for the database files. What database file? Don't know. yes, you have to look up and look, okay, select two. Okay, select two. What file is that? Okay, you have to go back and look to see what was your open for that select two. You know, not exactly easy. You know, of course, I come from the world of SQL, where, okay, you want to find a query, you actually have to find the table and the columns and all that kind of stuff. So, but I was thinking about doing, I thought about doing because of, actually I got an email from Tim Uick. I've asked to actually create a miniaturized version, so forth, of the rules. The whole idea of these rules is to basically create a kind of a beginner's rule book. Meaning that what you would do is you, instead of reading this big, long, I don't know how many pages it is currently, the current rule book. It's been a while since I actually looked at the number of pages. So I want it to be like 4 to 6 pages, something that's relatively short to read. A lot of it, because a lot of it actually doesn't even require rules per se. It's more of, okay, here's the commands. This command does this. And the thing is, I thought about that because, I think that's a great idea. There's a lot of commands that you can do it's called a miscellaneous order. They're called orders, not commands, but orders. And you can have there's an extensive number of orders that can be used. Now, here's the thing. I've watched games over how many years now? Way too long. probably around 10 years, maybe a little less than that. Obviously, the podcast has been going for almost 10 years, so I'm not sure if I was doing Starfleet Warlord before or after I started the podcast. I think I started it before the podcast, so it definitely would be over 10 years. Wow. That's one of those crazy things. You think about it, it's like, yeah, has it been that long? Yeah, it's been that long. So anyway, sorry, I got sidetracked. I lost my train of thought. Chase that rabbit and the rabbit got me lost. Over the 10 years I've actually been watching people play because I run the orders and therefore I've seen what people actually use. For the most part, there are a limited number of orders that people use. There are certain orders that are never used. There are some orders that are used in a very few instances, maybe 1 in 1,000 orders, that's actually one. I just realized I missed one. Okay. So what I did was this past weekend. I think it was the past weekend. I decided to look through all of the rules, all of the orders for Starfleet Warlord, and go, okay, what if I could trim this game down to the minimal orders that are required to play the game, to give it at least enough of the flavor of the game so that people can play the game basically, but not have to learn it all. So what I did was I came up mini set of orders. And also there were some things because I'm using a mini set of orders. I was thinking about doing, okay, let's finish with the mini set of orders. Because I have a mini set of orders so that it's very small. And let me think, when it comes to the miscellaneous starbase orders, I've got a total of 12. When it comes to ship orders that take a full turn, there are 4. And for the most part, there are 4 that I use. The ones that I there's a couple I dropped off the top of the bat, and I'll get back to that in a bit. And then there's another 7 of ship orders that you can do within the actual turn itself, within a single turn, i.e. they take up a single movement slot versus taking up the whole turn. Like, for taking up the whole turn, it's you got the 3 scan orders, terrain, ship, and cloak, and then you have the prospecting. So I figured those are kind of critical. And then the kind of critical ones for the minimalistic ships are, you know, for the ship order themselves, are refit, upgrade, cloak, mission, changing mission, fixing the ship, training, raid, doing raids, and curing, you know, curing the crew. That's the minimum set. There's quite a few other ship orders that you can do. For example, you can buy legendary officers, but I figured, okay, I'm boiling this down to the basics. The legendary officers are not needed to learn the game. Legendary officers are a nicety to have. If you're looking to actually optimize and all that kind of crazy stuff, it's just like the whole things with events. A lot, currently, the veteran players cannot imagine playing a game without events, without actually selecting their events for each turn. They can't imagine not doing that. You know, so it's just, I think that's kind of goofy in my mind. They don't like which brings me to, let me go through the other orders that I started with, the ship orders. You got the miscellaneous / starbase orders. You got AA, which is basically you can find out how much a certain ship costs. BC, BD, BF. Okay, BC is buy commandos. BD is buy drones, buy fighters, buy PFs, buy T-bombs. Fortify site, you know, FS command. PR, which is primary race. You get to select up three races. PS, which is purchase ship. SC, you know, scan a sector and scan a hex. SH, I forgot what the difference between it. Oh, scan cloak. Sorry, scan cloak is SC. SH, just scan hex. And then SF, if I recall correctly, that's scan fleet. And then SX, which is a extended scan. And that requires certain abilities of your bases to do. Now, one of the things that I was thinking about with this mini game is that to implement this mini game, one thing I'd have to do is actually write code. The whole idea in my mind for this game is to basically, instead of what I previously thought of, which is rewriting the whole engine. And the biggest issue with rewriting the whole engine is getting it right, i.e. the algorithms and so forth, making sure that those work exactly the way they previously worked for the most part. The biggest issue that I know we've had problems in the past, at least it seems like it, because I have done a multitude of lookups for at least a certain individual, because he kept on saying that, oh, well, why did I lose? You know, I should have won. But I looked at the code and went, yeah, you should have won. But according to the algorithm, you have a 90% chance of winning. But if the dice roll a certain way, you can lose. And that's all it requires. So I'm not sure that it's the problem with the random number generator that it seems like we're having. It seems just a little, you know, not skewed. The results seem a little skewed, not purely random. Because in theory, purely random, he should win. Well, actually, okay, let's back up. Because if you think something's truly random could mean that you get a result. If you, like, let's say you roll dice and you roll six dice, truly random means that one of the possibilities in all of it, it's rare as possibly can happen, is six ones right in a row. Very slim, but it is still possible. Just because you got that doesn't mean, oh, that's impossible. No, it is possible. It's one of the possibilities. So, in that case, you know, Now, my issue with the random number generator, at least in the past, has mainly because of I've been running it within DOSBox, and I think there might be something weird with DOSBox and running the DOS emulator. I'm not sure if the random number generator is as good, or, you know, because of startup, you know, what's considered the computer being starting up. And, you know, for all I know, Clipper bases its seed off when you actually turn on the computer, not when you ran the program. I normally, when you do a seed, because remember, this is all pseudo random number generator. There's no true random number generators in a computer. And given that, you have to have a seed. Normally, the seed you use is actually like the millisecond that you start your random number generator. You create your random number generator. That's your seed. And the reason why you do that is because invariably, it's not random per se, but it's really, really hard to have exactly the same number to start with the exactly same millisecond. That is hard to do. Is it possible? Yeah, it's possible. But how many people are actually going to do that? Not many. So that's why it's like I don't worry about the random number generator for like the client. Now the SFU online client, you know, has some people have so it's skewed. Well, that might be the case, but if you want to check the numbers, because one thing I do in the SFU online client is I actually track the amount of random numbers. Well, what given the dice, what are the percentages for each of the rolls? And, you know, if they're close enough, within, you know, I mean, one, you have to have a large enough sample set, number one, and number two, you have to have a large number of rolls, large enough number of rolls for it to be valid. Actually, that's one thing I've not checked for a while, which is my own results for that number generator. I think I'm going to look it up because I do have the tracker in the client. So given that, when I do this, let's go tools. Ah, there it is. It's called the Dice Monitor. Now, from an internal, my internal die roll monitor, a total the total number of rolls is 1,713. Now, currently, I haven't used any. I also have monitored an external die roll if you choose that, and I have not. Now, according to this, according to my die roll, internal die roller, I have my average roll is 3.5, which basically, let me think, 6 minus 1 is 5, divided by it's 2.5. Plus 1 is 3.5. Basically, that is, I think, pretty much on average, a 3.5. That's correct. That's where you want a die roller to be. To be, you know, in the middle. To have an average roll, it should be 3.5. Because between 1 and 6, the actual middle is not 3, it's 3.5. So, for my die roll, it looks quite normal. The number of rolls for each just lets you know. For one, it's 276. Two, I rolled it 279 times. Three, 292 times. Four, 315 times. Five, 281 times. And six, 270 times. Now, some people, that's still not, that's not perfectly random. Because they're not, the numbers aren't the same. Yeah, so it's that's the way it works. It's random, you know. to have a perfect distribution, you have to have the same number generator for a long period of time after you use your random seed. You select your random seed, and then you just keep rolling the die based on that one seed. And therefore, over the history of it, you know, it in theory should come out to be close to being the same. And this, to me, this is pretty darn close when it comes to the results. But anyhow, getting back. So that's been a minor problem. So what I'm thinking about doing for this mini, for what I call Starfleet Warlord Light, I'm not sure if that's the official title of the game. It's, someone's got a better idea for, to keep it close to Warlord, because of, actually, I got to check to see if I'm not sure if I own the copyright for Starfleet Warlord or not. I know that it definitely would have to be, I don't know. So I was going to say, I'm going to leave it Starfleet Warlord Light at the moment, or, because basically that's what people have been calling, Federation Commander have been calling it SFB Light. Well, it's not really SFB. It kind of is SFB Light, but it's not. And given that, obviously, you know, the quote unquote SFB Light's called Federation Commander, so it's a totally different name. I'm not sure what you would call it. Warlord's Revenge, or I don't know. I'll figure out something. GMC, you know. Is it Tim? Yeah, Greater Metal. Greater Metal Genic. Forget that. GMC, whatever that stands for. It's the big brother of the LMC, which is Lesser M Cloud. I'm going to try to pronounce it. Forgive me. But I figured, for the most part, when it comes to Starfleet Warlord Light, currently my only slowdown on the project is picking a programming language of what to do. What I probably should do is skip the programming language and start working on things like rules. What are going to be the rules? Because of what I'm figuring on, Starfleet Warlord Light is going to have a different set of rules. There's still going to be some things that are going to remain true. That is, that was one thing I was thinking about over breakfast this past weekend, which is, what are the minimum set of rules that would be required to actually have this thing work? So, some of the things that I thought about would be minimal. There's certain things that I was going to drop. One of those things, events, random events, for the beginning game, drop them. I understand that. Well, it's obvious to me that some people who play Warlord don't want random events. They want selected events, not random events. And that's too much control, too much power. Because the random events, that was never really designed ever for. The way the engine was created, it was never designed for a player to actually be able to select events. That the order, there's an EV, it's called EV. The EV order lets you select the event that you want to use. Possibly. Now here's the thing. The engine itself, if you select an event that you previously used, it then goes, oh, we already used that one. So then it falls back on what it knows, what it was designed for, which is the whole idea of it only, the event only happening once. Well, that's part of the way the engine works, which is it only used the random event once. The idea was that it would even out the good and the bad in the end. But for those, you know, the idea was that if a random event was selected once, and it was used up, and then the random number generator would come up and go, "Oh, you're using the same event. Okay, forget it. Can't use that event. Can't use the event again. So create a new event. You know, select another number, and then use that one." Now, there are some players that really don't like this, but same time, it's like, guys, that's the way the engine is. That's the way that this works. Players aren't supposed to be able to select events. It's not supposed to go, okay, well, you've already used that event. No, the engine goes, you know, this is the whole selecting of events. It's kind of a jury rigging of the process. The way, at least that's the way I feel like when Bruce added this to the engine, that he added it as a super duper feature for those veteran players. It's never designed for beginning players. It was designed for advanced players that knew what they were doing. And I'd have to go back and check the newsletters, because I do have newsletters on the Play by Email site. It's play-by-e-mail.com, in case you're interested. Or actually, let me double check, because I'm pretty sure that should do it. Because I worked on... I don't see it doing my... Pretty sure. Yeah, it doesn't. I'm going to have to figure that out. I could have sworn I set it up so StarfleetWarlord.com would actually redirect you. That might be something you might want to do instead. Let me just do one quick check, which is, let's do a search for Starfleet Warlord. It's been a while since I actually... Yep, and this is... I got a serious suggestion and goes, okay, cool. Looks like, yeah. If you do a search, at least I'm on, for me, it's DuckDuckGo, Play by Email, where Starfleet Warlord rules. It's right there. Now, that's the top one. Now, unfortunately, Starfleet Warlord... Agents of Gaming, their website still has Starfleet Warlord. Let's look at this for a moment. Wow, still got everything here. I think I need to talk to Bruce about that. That if he could, at the very least, remove a lot of this stuff and just maybe just redirect it to my own website. I think that'd be great, just in case people find it. Wow, cool. Don't mind me. Right, okay. The early years. Okay. Hey, Ross, how you doing? But anyway... The whole idea, to remove and boiling it down to the basics of the game itself. For example, you know, obviously moving of the ships, I got rid of the there's a lot of orders I removed, as I mentioned. Those are the orders I kept. I didn't. There's some orders like reverse movement or reverse orders. I totally got rid of that. That, again, that's a more of an advanced technique that's not really necessary to learn the game. You know, the whole idea of the actual full Starfleet Warlord is for more advanced players. The idea of this one is just something simple that people can play, and actually I can automate the whole process instead of trying to take what currently is written in Clipper and try to automate that, what I'm thinking about is actually for beginners or, you know, possibly even veterans, they can use this boiled down version of Starfleet Warlord to play and learn. So of course we have, you can buy ships, you can, that was just critical. Now, one thing I thought that was kind of critical to the whole game system is the whole idea. I'm sure you probably missed it, which is the AA order, which allows you to find out what the current price of a ship is. Well, you only need to know what the current price of the ship is if the price of the ship goes up and down. And I felt like that's one of those mechanics that, in theory, I could probably drop, and I might drop it in the future, but I want to first try to implement it. I'm gonna look at the engine to see how it does it, and then go from there to see how hard or simple, how hard it is. So, obviously, some of it has to do with how much that ship is bought. Because the ship is bought, the price goes up. If ship bought more often, the price goes up. If the ship doesn't get bought at all, obviously the price might go lower. Now, I have not checked the engine to see if the price can ever go below the starting price. My guess is no, it cannot. But I think that's a blind guess on my part. I have not looked in that part of the code because usually people don't try to ask me, oh, why is the cost of that ship so high? Oh, why is it so low? Well, never asked. No one. I've yet to ask. I know for a fact that there is no one who's actually asked me why is the price so low. I've never seen that. Now, obviously, I still have to have the whole idea of a galaxy. Have the different. I have to generate a galaxy of the different sectors. The sectors are important. How the sectors. Not laid out, but how that there are sectors that basically it's not just one grand board that is actually split up into these mini little sections, and then obviously the other part of it that's kind of critical at this juncture in the way Starfleet Warlord actually plays is the whole idea of information. Now, I got rid of some of the things, again, like the whole messaging system that's within Starfleet Warlord. I got rid of it because of, in this day and age, most people don't use that messaging system. If they want to post something, there's only a few individuals that actually use it. Now, I might add it back in because there are certain things that you actually would use the messaging system for. For example, if I recall correctly, the messaging system, you can actually specify that it's going to send a message to anyone who's in a certain sector. So, what that would mean is that you actually would send a message to everyone in that certain sector. Well, and you don't have to know who's in that sector. You just have to say, okay, well, everyone that's in the sector, send a message to them, you know. Doesn't mean that person's in that sector. It just means that they want to communicate with the people in that sector. Which makes sense because if you're going to make deals and you don't know who's there, you know. But I was going to start with not having the messaging system in the game. So we got the ship market is there. Of course, a couple of things that I thought were kind of critical into the actual game itself were NPCs. Basically, computer automated corporations. That's kind of a critical part of the game because of without those, it gets really boring because what you're doing is you're playing against other people, assuming that you have other people to play with. And then you're going from sector to sector. The only thing you're doing is you're collecting stuff and then you're waiting to get running into, your opponent. versus NPCs, you know, you got to fight them and destroy them. That was one of the things that actually someone had asked me about, which is the whole idea of, well, I think he wanted to actually see, you know, in Starfleet Warlord is actually smarter. Actually, he didn't say it. He said it for the new Die Hard 44 game. It's like, oh, I want smarter NPCs, basically, is what he said. Well, it's not one of those things that you can just say, okay, I'm just going to do smarter NPCs for this one. It's going to be smarter NPCs for everybody, for all the games, you know. And as again, you know, that's one of those things that I'm not so sure I'd be comfortable with modifying the Clipper code to actually make it smarter. So if I can start with a light version of the game, I can. And there's another thing I plan on doing with the light version of the game, which is there is, for the light version of the game, there will be no paper. If you want to play the game, you have to use a computer and you have to actually type it in yourself. That, you know, because for the next version, I'm done. Absolutely and utterly done. Because if you want to play the light version or the fast version, no. As I said, it's going to be completely automated. The whole idea is going to be that I don't do anything. You get your orders when you get your orders. Now, the only thing that I might have to get involved in, which is, of course, when people slack. Now, part of that is going to be, you know, one of the things that if I do this whole thing completely automated is I'm going to have a waiter board. You know, I'm going to have a board of listing who has yet to put in their turns. What corporations? Or possibly what players? I'm like, you know, probably what players have not put in their orders for the current turn, and then automatically that okay, if you are so many days late, you know, if you're late, your turn skipped automatically. You know, there will be actually no, yeah, there are no. Wait, I need to pull my note. You're missed. You know, it depends upon, you know, if the person wants to do a really quick game, which means maybe a really quick turnaround, you know, because that's always been one of our issues in the past, which is we got people who are slackers. Not meaning that they're purpose, you know, that they're inattentive and so forth. It's just they have other things in real life, and they obviously don't find the game engaging enough to have that as a priority in their lives. And that's fine. And possibly there might be a way of changing that, i.e. have it so that it's completely automated so that turnarounds are in hours or minutes. Well, I'm gonna say hours. Or possibly a couple days, i.e. the game will run as fast as everybody wants it to run to a certain degree. After you know, have it so that the game can be set up to have a specific timeout. That is, okay, if we're waiting for orders from a single player after a week or after maybe 2 weeks, because 2 weeks is the normal turnaround time, let's say 2 weeks, it'll automatically move to the next turn. You know, it'll skip that player and move forward. You know, because that's one of those things you don't want to have the players to control. Say, oh, you know, put it up to the vote. Do we want to skip this guy's turn? Yeah, and that'd be really bad way of running a game. So, so NPCs are kind of important. Monsters, I'm debating at the moment. I think monsters are kind of I think monsters are kind of interesting. Russ is saying, I'm a slacker. I'm Russ. I'm a slacker. I got up steps to go. Of the 12-step program, yeah. But yeah, the whole idea is just to keep it moving as fast as possible, because I figure that's one of the things that disinterests people, which is it takes 2 weeks for turnarounds. In some cases, I think that's fine. I think people actually like having a two-week turnaround, because a good thing about 2 weeks is you can schedule it. The big problem, obviously, with a variable turnaround is that you always have to be on, you know, and depending upon, let's say, for example, that you're going to be gone for a week. So you put in your orders, might possibly early, you know, so at least you can run for the next turn. And then you come back after 2 weeks, and then you start going again, and some people might be upset with you for taking 2 weeks to reply, you know. But in the case of the way it currently is set, which is every 2 weeks, you have 2 weeks to deal with everything, get it set, and keep going. So there's a good, yeah, Russ, thank you. I'm sorry, I've not actually had a chance to actually watch your video, but thank you for saying that video. I should be able to look at the video. Maybe Saturday. Or Saturday or next week, one of those two. Because it's kind of it's Easter. I got here late. I sat down at like 9 o'clock, a little bit after 9 o'clock, actually it was later than that. Because I had the Holy Thursday Mass that I went to. Then of course I still got Mass tomorrow. And I got Mass on Saturday, and also I have to go to Mass on Sunday because of I'm a Eucharistic minister on Sunday. So normally I wouldn't have to go, but this time I do, and that's fine. No problem, Russ. It's over an hour. I can't wait to see it. So we got those kind of things are critical. Obviously, we're still gonna, at least at the moment, we're still gonna run it the way the current warlord works, which is each person's turn gets executed. That person, and then that person, and that person, and that person. So you still have an order of how people are run. There was an idea a while back when I first took over Starfleet Warlord, which is modifying the way the Starfleet Warlord worked, i.e., which is this is one of those crazier ideas, and I'm not even sure if it would work with the current, with the way play by email and asynchronous play works. And that is that do it more along the lines of what? Like Starfleet battles. In that, what you would do is everyone's turns will be run at the same time. Meaning, that's what I'm doing now, but it's not what I mean. What I'm meaning is that, okay, movement, you know, when it comes to ship orders, boom, everyone has their ship orders for the first impulse, for the first move, they're executed, boom, everyone. Now, obviously, here's the thing, that is, you still have to have an order of some sort of who goes first. That's just the way things are. Now, obviously, makes things really crazy. If we still have to maintain that order for individual movements. So everyone, you got movement for player 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, movement 1, movement 2. Players 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 move. Now, of course, the crazy thing about this is that it makes running into people, having it so that you intercept fleets makes it a lot more difficult. Maybe, maybe not. I'm not sure. Darius was mentioned that he hadn't gotten any playtesting done for a while. If he had not, it didn't do much work in defining what rules he had done for the eels. So he had to do it from memory, in which case it might be completely and totally wrong. It's basically for those in the audience that aren't in the chat room. Russ actually, many months ago, we talked about playtesting. And actually, Russ was part of that conversation. And in that conversation, he mentioned that he sets up this environment, I think, with like Excel spreadsheets. And I'm not sure, I don't think he used Vassal. He might use Vassal. Use these different tools to actually play, you know, do play tests. Now, the one thing that I was interested in is if he could record a video, which he did, of how he does that. Because of, number one, you know, that's one of the things that I could possibly use to incorporate that into the client. Because that's one of those things that could be awesome for the client, which is using the client for as a play test platform. Okay, Russ is saying he did it all in Visio. Okay, though I think you still had to do, you might have to do some in Excel, like EA forms, that kind of thing. But I know it was completely on the computer. Because I know, who was it? Dang it. There was a guy I was talking to, and he, I forgot how he was playing, I think he was playing Marines, using this, no, actually, he was learning how to play Starmada. That's the way he was learning. He had an iPad program which had the game board, and he'd import some of the some graphics which represent the ships. Okay, so wow, that's interesting. If you can do damage allocation in Visio, I would be amazed. Russ is just mentioning that the automatic EA is actually done within Visio. It's like, I didn't know it could do mathematics. But anyhow, whatever. So those, I think those are the main elements. There are, you have to be able to move the ships. You have the NPCs that can move the ships and attack. I don't want to add the attack percentage yet, because I don't think that's really necessary. Basically, it's something that I can see adding, but at the moment I can see just using like a fixed percentage when it comes to attack and defense. Now, the one thing obviously I'm going to have to implement is, at least, well, I'm going to have to try to match the combat algorithm. Because I need that to be relatively close. It doesn't have to be exact, but it has to be close enough so that if someone goes from Starfleet Warlord Light to regular Starfleet Warlord, that it's not that big of a jolt when it comes to the results of the fights. So that's one thing I definitely would have to do. The reports, again, another thing I have to make sure that the reports are at the very least very similar. I was debating on myself when it comes to the news portion, you know, what's happening outside of you, you know, and that kind of thing. It's something that probably I can boil it down and maybe add some news portions. Obviously, the one thing that I also I'm debating within myself is the whole idea of the flavor text. Because I'm sure anyone who's played Starfleet Warlord knows about flavor text. Heck, for most games, you know about flavor text. You know, the whole idea of that, like in the case of, let's say, news, that you hear on the subspace about, you know, about this event. So it makes it more of like a news story and more engaging than just, that one of your neighbors, this thing happened to him. Instead of saying, oh, this, the masters have decided that they didn't like what you were doing and they destroyed your ships, you know, and that's kind of a random event or something like that. Or, you know, the masters are really, something like, the masters are really pleased with, you know, the bravery that you exhibited by defeating this corporation, you know, something like that. There was just, it's completely flavor text. It's not needed to actually play the game. It has nothing to do with the mechanics of the game. But flavor text can help players to be more engaged in the game itself. And that's one of the things that I'm debating. Obviously, for the first time through, like the beta, or possibly, well, definitely the alpha, possibly the beta, at least the first beta, I wouldn't worry about the flavor text that much. I'm more worried about the mechanics and make sure the mechanics are working. And of course, we have the separation of Starfleet Warlord with Starfleet Warlord the engine and Starfleet Warlord the actual UI. So that's two separate, totally separate things. And right now, the only thing I'm thinking about doing is actually the engine. Worry about the engine is what I'm thinking about. Is just worrying about how the engine works, making sure, because the generating of the galaxy, that's going to be a bit of work. Meaning that defining how many planets and what kind of terrain, because terrain's still gonna be there. Everything when it comes to the point and area terrain is gonna be there for the different hexes. Obviously the whole idea of scanning and not knowing what's on the next map, in the next sector over, unless you do a scan. Obviously some of the things that I actually can do is making sure that certain things are limited, so that, you know, if you are scanning, you can't scan greater than one hex over, you know, or and limit those things. So it's going to be, I think, interesting to see how this, I can get this whole thing going. I still got to pick a language, even though, as I also said, that maybe I should focus more on the rules for certain things. I'm not sure if it would be a good idea to try to write down the rules for basically a English version of the actual algorithms when it comes to, you know, the selecting of the planets. Oh, sorry, selecting of the terrain within a sector. Obviously sectors are going to stay the same, which is 16x16. The generation of all of that, the generation of the corporations themselves, you know, because that's one of those things that, when it comes to NPCs, part of the NPCs is that they actually have generate these random names. Well, those random names are going to be kind of important, because again, that's comes down to flavor text. And all these kind of algorithmic things, is it worth spending the time to actually write them up in English? Because of it's easier to scribe for me, because I'm a developer, is to write the code actually in code, write the algorithm actually in code. So let's have to wait and see, you know, Actually, there's a language that I was just introduced to, let me think, yesterday. It's called Rust, which actually kind of looks kind of interesting. I'm gonna look at this a little bit more because of the interesting concept about. I know Brian Cottrell does not like it, but it's a different way of thinking about things, and that's one thing I think might have been missed that Brian Cottrell might have missed when he first tried to do what he was trying to do, which is the tough part about Rust is its ownership model, that each data structure is owned by, there's only one copy of that data structure. Well, not copy. That data structure is only owned by one thing. So you can't share it. Of course, by definition, since an object can only be owned by one thing, that means you have to use what's I think called an actor model. Actor model is what it does is it takes a copy of the data and plays it all at once. It's completely thread safe, and then when you're done with it, you return it. You return a copy. Now, obviously, there's some issues with that. The pure actor model is that whenever you modify it, you actually create another copy of the object, and that's not the case. But in the case of Rust, in theory, if they got the ownership model correctly, in my mind, you can actually modify an actual object, or modify a data structure that's owned by you. Now, tough part in my mind is how do you define ownership? Obviously, there's questions I have to look at at Rust itself and the documentation and about that to find out exactly how ownership works for data structures. Because I was just, Lord have mercy, this one guy. He was on Floss Weekly. Free Libra open source software. I think that's what I got. But the guy that was on Floss Weekly, he's really excited about Rust. And the one thing, he's so excited. He's excited just about being excited. he was flying. It's like, I'd like to know, ask him, it's like, how much caffeine you had today? 1, 2 pots of coffee, just because of, he was just, just rolling, asking, the interviewer had a hard time getting words in edgewise, because it was waiting for I didn't want to be rude, like most people, they didn't want to interrupt the guy. Randall Schwartz did not want to interrupt the guy in the middle of when he was talking. But it seemed to be becoming obvious that the only way you're going to have him stop is you have to interrupt him. That's the only way it's going to work for him. So I have to pick up my language. I'm debating in my head because I was thinking about Go, but it doesn't have an affinity to Go. I can do Java because I know Java. I can do it in Perl. I know Perl, and actually that's one thing that Randall Schwartz was mentioning, how there's actually quite a bit of work out there for Perl programs. The problem is that they're having to switch off of Perl because they don't have enough people who know Perl. And I wouldn't mind doing it in Perl at all. It's very portable. I like the language. Now, it'd be my first actual product, real program. Actually, no, it'd be my second. Closer to a second one. Because my boss at work, he knows Perl, and he creates Perl programs. I create Perl scripts. The big difference there is Perl scripts are hack jobs. They are designed to do one thing, and that's it. They're not really designed to be kept around and, you know, get all the niceties of, in my mind, all the niceties of, oh, the option you have to use dash dash boom for that option, or dash this for that option. It's like, no. Here are the different things that you have to pass in, bump 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 bump, into Perl, and into the script, and it will run. So, you know, the whole idea of options, like, eh, that's rare. But anyway, you know, right now I am thinking actually about Rust, but that's neither here nor there for you guys. So the whole idea is just to trim it down, start with the Warlord down to his basics, and going from there. And since I don't have to try to port the engine, I can probably get it done a heck of a lot faster. You know, obviously, one thing I was thinking about is it's going to be some of the tougher parts that's going to probably slow me down are going to be the whole generation, the creation of the galaxies and that kind of thing. I got the information about, you know, the ships and so forth, and I can probably use the same files for the most part. I have to look to see if that anything needs to be modified there. But I'm hoping basically to use the same files to a certain degree, change the format of the files, but I still want the same kind of quote unquote tables and columns, because of I think it's pretty well known, and I think Bruce did a good job in capturing all the constructs that are required to be captured. So. Go with that. Okay, with that, I think I will wrap it up for this evening. Had a nice little discussion about Starfleet Warlord Light, some of the ideas I have about it. Obviously, I will keep you guys up to date. Anyone's listening to the podcast, I'll keep you guys up to date about where I am in the progress of this. If it's one of those projects that I run into a roadblock and I stop, or if it's something that I continue to work on and see it. Obviously, another thing, at the start with the engine, I have to go after I get the engine done. Then I have to have it so it's available. Have to start working on UI to actually be able to input the orders and so forth. I think that's actually going to be a lot easier because I already know how to do it. It's the Starfleet Warlord aid, but just pared down. That's all it is. Because of the big difference is, you know, everything else is going to be the same. You're still going to have the sector scans. You're still going to have the reports. You're going to have the of all the actions that occur. You're going to have the results, you know, as in the ships that are available. You know, all that stuff is going to be pretty much the same. So, I'm hoping, you know, that I can possibly not have to do the code base twice. You know, that everything else is going to be the same. It's just that some of the results are going to look a little different. It's going to be automated and all that kind of thing. Okay, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.